The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to DSC's Untamed Heritage, the unique blend of hunting, conservation, and the outdoor lifestyle, delivered in an entertaining and informative fashion as only a veteran outdoorsman can do. DSC's Untamed Heritage is brought to you by DSC, Dallas Safari Club, conservation, education, and hunter advocacy. Hornady, accurate, deadly, dependable. Trigicon, brilliant aiming solutions. Ruger, rugged, reliable firearms. Burnham Brothers Game Calls, calling is calls made. Double Nickel Taxidermy, where hunting memories are preserved. Now, here's your host, Larry Wysoon.
Happened to be at the Double Nickel Taxidermy this morning, just outside of, well, kind of between New Braunfels and San Marcos, and guess who I ran into? Blake Burnett. Blake and I usually show up here at Double Nickel to visit with John Wilson and his guys, but it's usually to check on international hunts that we've done in terms to make sure that our skins and our skulls and those that we took elsewhere, you know, across the water are here. And how many international hunts did you do last year, Blake?
Not a single one. It's been a different year.
It has been. I'm kind of the same way, but I know that you've been spending a lot of time in South Texas this year.
Yes, sir, and I've enjoyed every second of it. I missed it. Didn't realize how much I missed it. Very true. Very true. I spent a lot of time down in South Texas. I leased a ranch, first ranch I've had a lease on, and you know, for my personal hunting mostly. In probably 20 years.
20 years, oh my gracious.
Yeah, the trips have always taken us, following you around with the camera to doing my own hunting, this is taking me around the globe. But we, you know, with the pandemic, that all came to a halt and changed a lot of things for I think a lot of hunters all the way across.
It really did. International in this instance doesn't only mean going across the oceans to Europe.
That's right.
New Zealand, Australia, you know, Africa.
Couldn't go to Canada. No.
I missed out on a hunt this year. The year before, of course, I shot a Boone and Crockett whitetail, but they did here at Double Nickel for me, and really was planning on going back this year. And as it worked out, the borders were closed, and now we're hoping that we've got a hunt that's up for auction on the virtual auction with DSC coming up here very shortly. And if you want to learn more about that, and you go to biggame.org, biggame.org, about the virtual event and the virtual auction. But we've got a hunt that I'm going to host there with Ron Nemechek, borders permitting, I guess, here coming this later on this year in November. But, you know, usually, too, we're planning bear hunts right now.
Yeah. We go to Canada every spring and fall, have for the last forever. For
bunches of years.
Yeah.
And
I look forward to going to Canada. I miss all my Canada friends up there. I had a big BC hunt with my friends over at Trigicon this past September. That's, of course,
with Aaron Fredlin.
Yeah. And didn't get to do that. And didn't get to go to Alberta and hunt with my good friend Kenton Lean with Big Stone Outfitting that I do every year. And you in the same boat with Ron Nemechek. And yeah, rumors are having it that Canada's maybe going to extend their border closures, you know, maybe through this year. I think it's all depending on this vaccine that they're trying to distribute globally. And we all know that's probably going to take time. So brought us back to home.
Brought us back to home. I'll tell you what, I used to spend so much time down at South Texas, of course, worked down there as a wildlife biologist, and I know where the property is, and I have flown over that property all in that part of the world with a helicopter many, many years ago doing game surveys and setting up management programs. But what is it about South Texas that draws you there? to me, it's a mystique.
Oh, man.
I don't know how to describe.
Yeah. The deer draw you there. I mean, hands down. I mean, all the deer hunting that we've gotten to do, or and I've gotten to do in other places, I don't know what it is about South Texas deer. They're just different, and they're. I think they're different all the way across. I mean, I think they're a very aggressive deer during the rut. Makes them that much more fun to hunt. I think they come to rattling horns better in Texas. I think our deer densities are larger. I mean, it's just completely different than anywhere else across North America and even in Canada. But I also like the sounds and the smells. You know, nowhere do you go that the quail are chirping and the coyotes are yipping at daybreak or at sunset. And I mean, just the abundance of flora and fauna and wildlife. I mean, just bobcats, coyotes, deer, javelinas, hogs, turkeys, quail, doves, you know, rabbits, Texas tortoises, you know.
There's something going on.
The time.
It didn't make a bit of difference how you hunt down there, whether you're spotting and stalking, whether you're sitting in a spot where the food plot such as you've got.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can bait in Texas as well, too. But the thing about it is there's always something going on. Even if there's nothing there but songbirds. But you got the green jay down there that is absolutely one of the most beautiful birds in North America, as far as I'm concerned. But you never know it's going to step out.
The property at least is so unique. I mean, even alligators, you know. Desert old thorn bush country. I have a lot of water on this property, and almost all the water that's there holds alligators, you know. And one of the coolest experiences here is a female gator in one of the ponds hatched 17 babies.
Oh my gracious.
And you've seen a lot of alligators. I've seen a lot of alligators in our travels, crocodiles too in other countries.
Absolutely.
I've never seen a hatch, you know, of first time, you know, just little ones right out of the den. And that has been a cool experience to watch. And South Texas is just there's a lot of history there behind whitetail deer hunting in South Texas. Even if a deer hunter's never hunted South Texas, he knows about South Texas and their big bucks.
Well, you know, for so long South Texas was really kind of the mecca for big whitetail deer, and
right,
and what's happened over the years ago we've always had big deer there, and they've had big deer elsewhere, but there was never that much emphasis put on them. And you go back into the early 1970s, and we saw a decline in quality as far as the overall quality in terms of antler and body size. And so there was a lot of research that was done. And, of course, from that, Al Brothers and Murphy Ray wrote a book called Producing Quality Whitetail. And along the way, you had the Dixie Deer Classic start up over yonder in Virginia, and then Texas Trophy Hunter Association. And all of a sudden, there was a lot of emphasis, but it all began here. And then I worked down there as a biologist and involved in a lot of that early stuff. But one of the things that happened there is we had so many hunters coming in from all over North America, and they'd come in and see how we were doing things. And they carried those management techniques back home with them. And as a result of that, later became the Quality Deer Management Association. And now you're starting to see what was started in Texas, in South Texas many years ago, spread pretty much all over North America.
Yeah, and yourself had a major emphasis that you're not giving yourself credit for on the development of, you know, big deer in South Texas.
Well, just being at the right place at the right time. A lot of that started, and we'll get back to the modern day, but a lot of that, when you get right down to it, some of the really big deer in terms of interest in mature deer kind of started when John Wooder started writing about hunting mature whitetail deer. Up till then, everybody just wrote about whitetail deer, you know, right. And they were shooting yearlings and two-year-olds. And John started writing, unfortunately he's passed away, but John started writing about hunting mature deer. At the same time, you had Jerry Smith, who
right.
was basically a pumper at the time, checking on wells, but he started photographing mature deer.
Big deer that he was seeing in the field.
Yeah, and for the first time, people were seeing what deer could really look like.
Right.
Well, when you combine those two are the kind of the guys, those two guys, I think, as far as I'm concerned, are really responsible for the interest that came along very quickly with a lot of different other things. And you know, but it's amazing where it's come from and where it's gone to. But tell me a little bit more about your property. And I want to go back to the alligator thing, too, because you're right. That country down there, it's cactus, it's thorns, it's dry country except for little watersheds
right.
and then ponds. And it's just amazing how many alligators are down there.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's some creeks and river systems that aren't that far. And there's a a state, you know, a lake 30 minutes right. from me that's been known to have big gators. In fact, the state does a hunt. I'm not right. really sure when it, what time of year it is, but they allow hunting of the gators on that lake. It's conducted by the state. So yeah, I mean, gators have always been there, and people don't realize that. I just happen to be, the property I have just happens to have those little watersheds that those gators, I think, migrate to when the creeks and river systems get low, you know, and they need a place to go to water.
And I think, too, the population's established so much that they start pushing each other out.
Absolutely. And in my understanding is when we do get large rains or the waters rise is when those alligators cruise and they move.
They do.
And I don't know for sure. I'm not a biologist if that's just the male gators or female gators, but I do know that, you know, I have seen different gators in the course of a year show up in some of my ponds that stay for a little while and then they've moved on and I don't know where they go to, you know. Yet have I experienced encountering one and, you know, totally, you know, walk into a deer stand or walk sitting in the deer stand and watching one walk across a road or a sendero or a field.
But
it could
very
happen.
Well happen in the future. I got tickled when we were down there just this past week, actually. Thankfully, hunting seasons go on into the middle of January
right,
there,
yeah.
And I was there with brought my grandson,
yeah, so much
Andrew
fun.
Down, who is in, with the Army as a sniper kind of thing, and Blake graciously invited him to come down and shoot a buck, really nice whitetail buck and three does. And but while we were there, I noticed there's a power plant not too terribly far away from him.
Yeah,
and I used to fly that ranch a lot. And before we get into the other deer situation, I remember flying one pond, and this pond or lake tank, whatever you want to call it, it's probably about 4 acres in size. But I counted 52 different alligators that I could see. That did not include some of the really small ones. But
yeah.
That's very typical of that
yeah.
country down there.
Wow, 52. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, the neighboring ranch I know has them as well. And I visit with the pumpers that, you know, there's
right.
oil, like there's oil and gas production all across South Texas now. And so there's the pumpers or the oil and gas companies are on these ranches pretty well daily. And I'm sure that they see a lot of things that we don't see because we're not there, you know, full-time 7 days a week. But I did happen to stop one of the guys that checks on the property that I lease and also on the neighboring ranch. I got to visit with him one day, and he actually showed me a video of a gator that he saw on our side right along our main lease road going in, you know, a good ways, I would say a quarter mile from any kind of water. And this was
oh,
a
yeah.
10-foot, you know, big bull male gator, you know, sitting in the brush, you know. And he was telling me about some of his encounters, and that's one of their liabilities and things that, you know, as they get hired with these companies is, you know, beyond just the poisonous snakes that are down there, is to be cautious of the alligators.
Cautious of the alligators.
Yeah, when they do their training or they get hired on one, you know, to check these pumps on these properties is that these are the conditions you could encounter. And I think that would probably raise, you know, an eyebrow to some people, like, you got to be kidding me, but it's the truth.
Yeah, I got tickled years ago. I used to hunt a ranch down there, not very well. Part of it now is under Choke Canyon, but
yeah.
Back when we invited some U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service guys, including one of the biologists out of Mississippi, to come hunt with us. And while we were out in the field, we were telling them about alligators, and they would just say, hey, you're a bunch of liars. This is not swamp country. There are no
yeah.
alligators here. We're driving down to Sendero, and that kind of the bottom a little old whitebreast thick, and here comes a 10-foot alligator that walked across. And he saw it, and he could not believe it, you know. And then finally we took him some of the little tanks, if you will, the stock tanks and water hose, and showed it to him. But
yeah.
until that time, he was convinced that we had set him up. We'd somehow or another imported an alligator, turned it loose for his benefit, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You shot a really nice deer this year down there.
I did. You know, none of this was planned. I mean, I didn't know that the property even had the quality of deer on it. It's a neat property. I lease it from a family who's been very, you know, I'm very grateful to have met, and they've been very gracious to let me lease the ranch and use it as a platform basically for the media business
Amen.
And stuff that we do. And you know, it's been fun to take it and turn it into a project. You know, implementing summer food plots and doing some things that the property's never even had done with it before. You know, some cattle had been on the property, and I had introduced my thoughts and ideas of what I wanted to do. And we removed the cattle, made it all about the wildlife, implemented summer food plots to your your recommendations of, you know, what to plant and do during, you know, because it can be such a dry, harsh desert climate.
It's a desert climate.
And started setting trail cameras not knowing at all what was really there. And, you know, started seeing lots of deer. And as the antler development started to grow through the spring and summer, you know, found several deer that were, you know, attention getters. But one in particularly that I thought, wow. You know,
yeah,
this could be something.
I remember sending me photographs. As
yeah, what do you think of this one? What do you think of that one? Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, he blew up in that last month of growth.
He really did.
And to be real honest with you, I remember sending you all those pictures, and we both were back and forth on what we thought the deer, how old the deer was, and what the deer may score antler-wise and inches. And the deer ended up really surprising. I think everybody that knew of the deer that I shared the history of with, and I set out to hunt him on opening weekend of the general rifle opener, because we are not MLD like a lot of South Texas ranches are, so I had to wait till the first weekend of November, and did not see the deer opening morning. And my trail cameras, he was very regular as a morning active deer, very early, and then would disappear, but then would never show up in the afternoon. So he was not there. Being a deer and doing what deer do, you know, you think you got them patterned and they'll fool you, like you've always said to me. But 2 days later, he did show up, and I shot him and made a good shot, but had a hard time finding the deer and had to call in legendary Roy Hines. And that was my very first experience to have to call in a dog handler, you know, to track a deer for me. And for it to be Roy Hines was such a special treat and a special experience and moment. And luckily, the deer didn't go very far. I just didn't take any chances, and the deer was much better than all of us thought.
He was, but to me, the right thing to do is when he had a blood trail or he knew the deer was hit, was to call Roy. Roy's dogs have been they've been around for a long time. His dad developed that line of dogs, and good gosh, they've probably been around now for 30-40 years, you know, numerous generations of trailing blood trail dogs, and there's none finer nor a finer individual as far as I'm concerned than Roy Hines. It's actually Roy Hines III. But he's just such a great character in so many different ways, and it's just amazing how many deer have been recovered because of Roy and his dogs.
Absolutely.
That probably never would have been recovered. That would have been just left out in the field because you couldn't find them.
Very true. And this could have been one of those instances.
Right.
I mean, I shot the deer, you know, with one of my favorite Ruger number ones, the 2.7 in a 2.75 Rigby using a Hornet bullet.
Oh my gosh.
It's never failed me. You know, both that round and that caliber
my favorites.
You know, my Trigicon scope was perfect for me in a low light condition because I shot the deer early, you know, during low light, and I felt so confident that I made a great shot. I had a phenomenal rest, but the way the deer reacted and the way the deer ran off, I didn't feel good about it. And you know, almost always there's a blood trail with a good vital shot, and I had no blood trail, and I just had that sinking feeling, you know, and wanted to push myself to look for that deer in the brush more. But truly, this was the biggest deer of my life as far as a native free-range deer.
Right, exactly.
And I told my cameraman, I said, you know, as we were deciding what we should do, and the first thing that came to mind was, let's go to breakfast and then give it time, and we'll come back and look for it. And then driving out of the ranch to go to breakfast, I said, no, let's call Roy Hines. And so that's what we did. And talking to Roy on the phone, Roy, you know, told Roy who it was and what we were doing, and we were filming for a TV show. And the first thing he asked me was, do you have a video clip of the kill shot?
Right.
And I, you know, we said, yes, you know, we sure do. And he said, send it to me. And, you know, with today's technology, we were able to do that immediately.
Right.
And I sent it to him, and it wasn't 60 seconds. I got a text message back from Roy that says, I'm on my way.
I'm on my way.
So that was a very positive feeling. Somebody as experienced as that who recovers deer who have been wounded, I felt then there's a chance. However, when we met, going back to our alligator conversation, Roy Hines knows about the alligators in that part of Texas.
Yes,
and
he does.
The first question he asked me was, do you have alligators on the ranch? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, I don't know that I'm going to look for the deer.
Right.
You know, which was another sinking low for a second, because, but respectfully, I understood, you know, those dogs mean the world to the him and his family, and they're both very valuable in terms of, you know, what Roy does with them and how he makes a living with them. So looking at some Google Maps, you know, through our cellular devices to show him where the deer was shot, where the deer went, where the ponds were into the, you know, in relation to that location,
right,
to be make sure the dog would be safe. And you know, I had he asked all the right questions. I didn't have all the right answers, because I didn't, all I knew was I hit this deer and the deer didn't run off like he was hit very hard, and that was my biggest concern.
Right.
But I knew where we could set boundaries by following the dog on a GPS if he was going to head to water to get
exactly
the dog back.
Right.
And one of the things that Roy had said to me, he said, you know, I have the ability to call one of my dogs off. He said, but I don't like to do it. It's
right.
not something good to do when you train these dogs. But the liability of the deer going to the water where these gators were and the dog ending up in the water, I certainly respected the fact that that was not going to happen, or we weren't going to allow that to happen. And fortunately, when Roy and I got to the lease and showed him where I shot the deer and there was no blood, showed him where the deer jumped the fence and there was no blood, but Rufus, good old Rufus, is the famous tracking dog.
Rufus, yep, that's
his demeanor completely changed at the point where he didn't pick up a scent at where I shot the deer.
No.
And another stinking low. When I showed him where the deer jumped the fence, Rufus's demeanor changed. And it's amazing to watch that relationship work between man and dog, you know, because Roy knew instantly that Rufus had switched his game and
right.
was on to something, though there was no blood. And Roy said, I believe Rufus is on him. And he said, now let's just sit here for a second, watch him on the GPS unit. And maybe 2 minutes later, Roy said, he's stopped. He said, we're going to give it a few more minutes and then we're going to go. And it was probably only 30 seconds, literally, that Roy said, let's go.
Let's go.
And he said, start looking for blood, boys.
Yeah.
And we probably went 100 yards. And there was not a drop of blood.
Till that point.
Until we got to the deer where the deer had coughed it up.
Right.
You know? The Hornady bullet performed perfectly. So it wasn't a matter about not having a blood trail. Really what it came down to was this was a 220-pound deer.
I was going to say, that deer was big-bodied.
Yeah, deer. And the angle that I took of the shot was, he was more angled than I thought. So the bullet did enter the pocket of the shoulder exactly where I
just
aimed.
Just where you wanted it.
But instead of a pass-through, it angled back towards the back left hip of the deer, therefore not allowing an exit.
Right, right.
But where there was blood was where the deer had stopped from running and had come out of its nose and mouth.
Yeah.
And it fallen.
So obviously,
over, so, yeah.
blood,
but
blood
there's
shot.
No doubt the deer was stiff,
yeah.
as can be. And we were talking about this as probable. It was probably about an hour and a half between the time I shot it and between
so
the time we
did
recovered
not
it.
Go all that far before he's down, but
right.
But if you, with no blood trail, no obvious blood trail at
yeah.
least.
And thick South Texas brush. I mean, if you've hunted South Texas, you know what I'm talking about. Could I have found the deer? I might have, and I feel like it would have been pure luck that I would have stumbled against, you know, upon him.
Right.
But doing the right thing to back out, not put my scent all in that bush
to mess it up
for a dog, and to call somebody like Roy Hines to come in there, and I mean, that was the smartest thing, and the right thing to do as a hunter.
It was the right thing to do. I was with Dave Fulson. He was filming a show for Trigicon's World of Sports Field. We were down there shooting does and some management bucks, and they put Dave on a really good buck looking right straight at us, and of course he hit the deer perfectly just a little bit to the right side of the vitals, and knocked the deer down, left and took off running, and we followed him maybe about 30-40 steps in that thick Cthulhu South Texas brush. And I was visiting with the landowner and with DJ, and I said, DJ looked at me, he said, what should we do? And I said, call Roy Hines.
Yeah.
And they were good friends with
sure. Yeah.
We call him Little Roy because I knew his dad real well too, which was Big Roy. But so we called Roy and put Migo. Rufus had been stuck in the side by a buck that he was trying to
to recover.
To recover or try to bay about three, well, right after you, your deer.
And oh, okay.
So he was still in recovery, but Migo is the younger dog, and they put Migo on him, and I mean, he did an absolutely fantastic job, bayed the deer, and they were able to slip in there and put another shot on him. And in that instance, John Schulte is,
one of his helpers.
Roy's son-in-law.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I got a chance to visit with Roy a lot, which I hadn't had a chance to do in a long time. We listened to John and watched John on the GPS, trail of deer, and thankfully found it. But having somebody like him around with dogs of the quality that he has is just, that's a godsend as far as I'm
concerned. And just the type of person that he is.
Oh, gosh.
You know, more than anything.
That don't come any better.
This was the biggest deer I'd ever killed as far as a native free-range deer, you know, scored 180 and 6/8, you know, pretty much a typical frame deer. And,
oh, yeah, long
and,
tines.
Long tines and long beams and great mass and you know, and had it not been for Roy and Rufus, I don't know where I would be, but I was just the excitement of getting to meet Roy and watch Roy work was just as exciting as getting to kill my biggest deer, and I told him that, and I mean that sincerely. And
absolutely.
And, you know, yeah, he's, if you're a landowner, a rancher owner in South Texas and or an avid deer hunter in South Texas, you know the name Roy Hines, and worth every dime if you have to call upon him to help you, you know. And he's such an honest, straight shooter. He'll tell you straight up if he's going to find the deer or not find the deer.
Yeah, they usually have a pretty good idea. A lot of times, even before he gets there, if you got footage of him. Now, a lot of people don't have them, but he'll tell you right away that, we may have a hard time getting this deer.
That's
you know, because he can tell where the wound was, where how the deer steps, how the dog reacts, and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely fantastic to spend time with Roy. And hopefully you don't have to do it in the situation where you called him in, but if you do, it's still worth every cent, like you mentioned, just to spend time visiting with him and to watch his dogs work.
I would give anything to sit around a campfire with that man and listen to him tell stories about just his dad and his granddad and just, you know, they're known for having big deer on their ranches, and a lot of people have hunted those ranches. They hunt those ranches, and a lot of well-known bucks have come off the Hines ranches over the years. You know of many of them.
Well, I had the great privilege and honor to get to know his dad real well. We were very good friends. His mom, Miss Fanny Grace, as far as I'm concerned, one of the most fantastic ladies that ever walked the face of this earth kind of thing. And thank God she's still alive. I had a chance to catch up with Roy about his mom as well, too. So,
stuff.
You know, again, you hate to have to call Roy, but when you do, man, it's worth it. If nothing else, just to visit with him kind of thing.
I agree with you.
Now, you had a chance to hunt with some of your family this year, too, and that's something that neither you or I have an opportunity to have done a whole lot in years past, outside of the fact when my grandsons were little, when you used to film those guys for Winchester World of Whitetail and some of the early shows that I was involved in.
Yes, and, you know, I didn't realize how guilty I felt until this year, and that's probably the most positive thing that's come out of this whole COVID global pandemic. But I did, and I took my little sister, and she has a little 2-year-old boy who's
fabulous.
I mean, it's just amazing to me that age to see how much he enjoys just all of being out there, from riding around in the pickup truck to feeding the fish in the stock ponds to, you know, playing in the deer blind, which he calls a fort, to really see him take an interest and also mimic what I do, you know, in terms of feeding the deer, filling feeders, doing work, sitting in the deer blind watching deer. I mean, he's tuned in, and he, even at 2, he gets it. He understands it. He got to go on 2 hunts. We took him on 2 hunts this season. One was opening weekend, and my sister Katie shot a beautiful buck.
Oh, yeah, and, big, nice, wide, massive.
Yeah, and to see that young boy's
real big South
excitement, because he understood what the bang of that Ruger rifle was, and walking up and recovering the deer, what that was and what that, you know, what that meant to him, because he could see the excitement in us. And, yeah, we hunted not just last week, actually.
Yeah.
A week before this, we were recording this podcast and shot some does for the freezer and took Katie and him again and got to be a part of that. And he loves every bit of it, and that just changes it for me too. I'm not a father, don't have kids, but wow, I'd do that every chance I could get, to be honest with you. If I never went abroad again hunting but could do that,
right,
I'm okay.
Well, I fortunately had two daughters that both hunted with me, and then yeah. the four grandsons that you hunted with,
yeah.
and even with the Catherine Rose, our one granddaughter. So, I mean,
yeah. Well, take in Andrew, your grandson.
Those
hunting.
Guys grow
yeah.
up, and then, of course, now Andrew is yeah, grown
that,
and
that same way.
In the military. And
I took another young man named Andrew that's a son to mutual friends of ours for a youth
Mike
hunt
Reynolds.
To shoot his first buck. Yeah. And my mom, I got to hunt with my mom this year. I took mom basically on a day hunt. She couldn't be away for very too long.
Right.
And that's the beauty of the ranch that
being
I lease
is
you know, an hour and a half drive from right. my home where I live. And my mom lives close to me. So to pick her up for the day, or really just to go for the hunt an afternoon, and, you know, wasn't about what we were going to shoot. I really had no idea what we would even see. And we weren't in the blind 5 minutes, and this amazing, beautiful buck with a big kicker comes walking down the sendero, and my cameraman Chase even says, you know, Barnett, look at this deer, you know, and I just looked at him and just said, Mom, get your gun, you know, and she was shooting a Ruger number one with a Trigicon scope, and of course, Hornady ammo all the way, and a 257 Weatherby Magnum, and that deer walked all the way down and got about 80 yards from us, and Mom was just excited but calm as can be, and shot the deer, and he didn't go 20 yards, and the excitement overload took over then, and so happy and proud for her.
Amen.
And that moment to be there and share that too was, you know, that's, to be honest with you, that's the second deer, that's the second buck my mom's ever killed in her lifetime. She's 70 years old, and that's the second deer I've sat with her and hunted. The last one was probably 20 something years ago.
Right.
Back before I really got real busy with working with you and being a part of this industry.
Exactly.
So another moment to be just thankful for out of all the situations at hand that are going on in our world today. So,
well, like you were talking about, I finally got a chance to shoot a buck. I've been wanting to do that for a bunch of years on my own property.
Yeah,
that's
been in your family forever.
Well, it's been in the family since 1850s.
Oh, wow.
I'm not going to tell you how many years it's been, but it's been longer than you've been alive.
Yeah.
Since I shot a deer there.
I think
there.
That's so cool, though.
So I'll tell that story some other time. But we're seeing changes going on right now in terms of hunting, and they're positive changes in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
I just saw figures to where in almost every state, hunting license sales were up anywhere from,
yeah.
the minimum was like 4, but even like in California, the hunting license sales was up like 10-12% compared to the past. And every other state, some of them, the states were up 20-25%.
Yeah.
A lot more people seem like they're staying home, and I think part of that has been because of the COVID thing. But also, I think a lot of people, because this locavore movement that's out there, where people are interested in gathering and partaking and taking their own food, has really changed the overall scene, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's a very complex, wide,
right, exactly.
you know, version of change that we're going through. The global pandemic has definitely
Certainly.
Been the number one hit across the globe, and of course, right here at home for us. I think hunting has gotten expensive. It's what scared some people away from it over the years past. But because of a global pandemic hitting, and when this pandemic hit and the shortages that everybody panicked and ran to the stores, you know, I mean, you look at the toilet paper situation and then the milk and then even the shortages of beef and chicken and
right.
things that were starting to show shortages of because of, you know, fear. I still believe that, you know, our government, you know, put on people and the restrictions that they tried to mandate.
Without a doubt.
People who used to hunt got back into hunting as a way to say, hey, I'm not going to, you know, if we really get in a shortage situation, you know, I can't provide for myself. So I think that created a spike in hunting licenses. People saying, hey, you know, I'm going to provide for myself one way or the other if these grocery stores run and meat markets run out of meat, you know, and we run short on food. I mean, who would have ever thought to begin
Finally, a lot of people realize food doesn't come from the grocery store.
That's right.
There's a source from
which
it has to come from.
And the other side of it, too, is, I mean, you know, I think the number one growing number of hunters is women today.
Oh, without a doubt.
And that started, I think, even before the pandemic.
Right.
And that's really important, in my opinion. I made a post on my social media, actually, yesterday that said, you know, if mom goes hunting, the whole family goes hunting.
Amen.
And there's so much truth to that, you know. And, I mean, we are human, and we are the apex predator. And if we get hungry, we're going to find a way to feed ourselves. And if that means, you know, having to take an animal, and that's what we do anyway.
I mean,
people forget, like you just said, people finally realize that meat doesn't just come from the grocery stores. It's grown, it's raised, it's killed, it's processed. It ends up in, you know, a wrapper and on the shelves. But as hunters, we have a way to gather for ourselves. So, yes, I agree that the pandemic has definitely spiked interest again in our hunting world, from hunters who have maybe given up hunting for a while due to just maybe wanting to take a break or it becoming expensive and not spending as much money and doing something other and a hobby wise. But it's a good thing to see, and I hope it's here to last.
I think it is. I think we started seeing this trend. I think it's going to continue for a lot of different reasons as well. And once somebody gets into hunting, I've seen very few people that leave it and go, I don't ever want to do this again.
I agree.
It's all the things that are involved with it, from the companionship of being out, the opportunity to get away by yourself, to learning about yourself, to learning about the animals, to being able to provide food, to being sure that you're going to have animals in the future, because the money's spent that go toward hunting that go toward the conservation of the habitat and the species. So I think people are starting to come more aware of that again. And I think that's just going to continue as we head into the future. A couple of other things before we shut this thing down. For years, I was with the Ruger Ambassador Program. It was Miss Kelly and I, and Miss Kelly Glenn initially.
Yes.
And then I was involved with Ruger for a while, and they've since added people. And then as of the first of the year, I have officially left the Ruger Ambassador Program. But you stepped up now and kind of replaced me there. So I am absolutely tickled, thrilled, honored to see you there. So I think of anything that Ruger has done lately, which they've done a lot of things right, I think they made the right decision there as well too.
I am honored to be a part of it, and a lot of that is thanks to you, Larry, and to the Ruger, rest of the Ruger ambassador team, and everybody at Ruger.
Right.
You know how much I'm passionate about Ruger guns, especially number ones from a collecting point.
Single shots like
I do. I love them, and I love their bolt guns too. But
absolutely,
that is correct. Yeah, as of January 1, I am now officially part of the Ruger ambassador team.
Congratulations.
And I want to thank everybody that made that possible. But you being the leading part of that, I'm forever grateful. So, I'm looking forward to that. It's unfortunate we can't all get together right now with the way COVID is and the trade shows all being canceled for 2021, because that's always a great, you know, we always group up and see each other in January normally during this time of year with the trade shows, and it's going to be different. We just have to learn to model things differently and work together differently and become creative on what we're going to be able to do with this team membership. But I'm excited about it. Look forward to it.
It's absolutely the best group there is, as far as I'm concerned.
They're all great too.
They all are great. But and I that was one of the hardest decisions I've made is to leave Ruger as from the ambassador program, but kind of thing. But they're still a sponsor on the podcast, and so I've not left Ruger. Of course, I've got Ruger guns that I'm going to be shooting from here on. Probably won't be buried with any of them, but at the same time, my grandkids and my daughters and their families, or all their families from here on out, will have Ruger guns for a long, long time. You do a lot on the digital platform, and before we leave, tell me a little bit about YouTube that you're doing right now, and the YouTube station, and also I know you do a lot with Carbon TV as well too.
I do, and I Carbon TV has been fantastic. Julie McQueen, she's the president there, and I think she runs a fantastic operation there. She's very keyed into the digital spectrum, the digital world, in terms of you know, finding and attracting those viewers. Again, we're going through a change, you know, and I believe even this pandemic is even going to further advance the digital world and digital space, and
without a doubt,
and technology has advanced in such a fast, short time that content now is a viewer can watch anything they want to watch today, and they don't need the aid of basic cable, Comcast, satellite, or even just a basic TV platform.
No.
I mean, you've said, I've heard you say it, people now today use television screens as a monitor, basically.
It is. Right.
And that is so true. And so what we've seen, what I have seen in terms of coming from the TV world is, you know, people are moving away from those monthly subscriptions of a Dish Network or DirecTV or some sort of cable provider, because there is no longer the demand for a $200 a month cable bill. And, you know, I try to relate it back to like the cell phone world, where we've seen how cellular phones have come so far from when they first started being used to today, and the mergers and the acquisitions that have been made between all the telecommunication companies over the years.
You know,
when one advances in technology, there seems to be more a buyout. Therefore, I think we're going to start to see that more. But yeah, you know, the YouTube thing honestly was just something created and just put there to see what it would do. And honestly, I'm guilty of not updating it as much as it probably needs to be updated. But again, it was created without a main focus of it being something to be a sole platform. And yeah, I mean, it honestly generates nearly 400,000 views in every 28 days. And, you know, comparing that to, you know, a cable Comcast time buy, which is what outdoor television is for most of us producers, we're matching the same numbers now today, so which tells me, you know, that more people are pulling the plug on cable and satellite. And so adding our content to Carbon TV, who works and helps promote us as producers as well, and enlarges that whole spread. And there's other platforms out there as well that we look at, you know, that I'm definitely looking at expanding too, because it's more available. It's more available to the person when they pick up their,
you know, their
remote control device.
My God, yeah,
you know, and it's free.
Exactly.
And you know, most of them also have, you know, free downloadable apps to your smart devices. And we live in such a fast-paced world today that people live off of their phones and their laptops or their iPads and everything else.
They really do. As you're aware, I do this little, I call it a little real-life TV show. It's a weekly, we change it every week, you know, with an episode of, and it's on Pride Outdoor Network.
Right.
And it's called a Sportsman's Life that I do with Luke Clayton and Jeff Rice. And our production cost is very low, thankfully, because and it's a weekly, so that we can update it every week. If something happens in a week that something you want to put, you can put it out with our regular TV shows. We're doing them six months in advance.
You know? Yeah.
And even there, just on the Pride Outdoor Network, we're getting 400,000 views a month. Yeah. You know, and on a really good year, you know, if you got four to five hundred thousand views, actual views on some of the TV shows that we did, the traditional type TV shows, it was a pretty good month.
Yeah. Well, you've been an executive producer and producer of your own television shows for years.
Exactly.
And you've seen the model change.
Oh, it's
you've seen
changed
the number.
Totally.
You've seen the numbers steadily decline from a linear television platform, and the digital numbers rise.
Right.
You know? And I think we can all say we're guilty of saying, "Oh, TV will always be number one." It is changing.
It is changing. And it, it is changing in a hurry.
Yes.
So
I'm glad you brought that question up. And yeah, I look forward to doing a whole lot more there. It's where it's going. It's where the next generation is following their content. And that's important, I think.
Absolutely.
In the worlds of the hunting world is the next generation.
Yes, yes. I'm thrilled to see you headed in that direction with some of the things you're doing.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too.
Before I shut this thing down, Blake, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do, or how can they learn more about what you're up to, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, or or any of those kind of things?
Absolutely. They can message me and find me on Instagram at Trailing the Hunter's Moon. Same with Facebook, Trailing the Hunter's Moon, or they can email me personally. I love to take questions at BWB Hunt Productions with an S at the end, plural, BWBHuntProductions@gmail.com.
Perfect.
So I thank you again, Larry. This has been fun.
It's always fun to spend time with you, my friend.
Yes, sir.
Look forward to the next time we spend another somewhere. I think probably going to be in North America from here on out, as far as I'm concerned.
And I am perfectly okay with that.
We'll share a campfire there again in the very near future. Blake, yeah. Thank you so very much for being with me.
Thank Bye. You.
DSC's Untamed Heritage is also brought to you by Texas Wildlife Association, working for tomorrow's wildlife today. Texas-raised hunting products, the Scent Gods. Kennetrek Boots, for the trail less traveled. Wildlife Systems, serving hunters and landowners since 1987. Boyt, the finest in hunting gear. And Pyramid Air, for all things air gun.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.